Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Good morning, everyone. Well, we got a series of good soaking rains this past week, but not without some really damaging winds in Marion. I hope no one was injured and that property damage was minimal. When we took our trailer load of branches collected from our yard and from that of our neighbor to the compost recycling facility out Barks Road, there was a steady stream of others doing the same, with the piles of plant debris growing higher by the minute. The rain certainly helped our garden plants, but sadly not just the plants that we welcome. It's astonishing how the combination of regular copious rainfall and high temperatures will cause weeds to spring up overnight where there were none the day before. It's imperative to get out daily and pull these uninvited guests while the soil is still soft and moist, so the roots come too, for once the soil hardens again, those usually remain behind. I know I have mentioned previously that for many years I've enjoyed reading Susan Wittig Albert's herbal mystery books. Also, for a long time, I have subscribed to her free monthly e-newsletter called All About Thyme, with that last word, of course, being spelled T-H-Y-M-E, in which she shares garden lore. This month, she related a brief history of the cucumber. The information she presented was interesting, and so I decided to delve deeper into the background of this versatile garden plant and share some of our combined research with you today. Perhaps it's also because I have cucumbers on my mind, since the various varieties I have planted finally seem to have stopped sulking about the cool weather earlier this season and have begun to vine nicely. Now, if only the cucumber beetles hold off for a while, I may yet raise some pickles. The botanical name of the cucumber is Cucumis sativus, the specific name sativus indicating its edibility. It's a member of the Cucurbitaceae family, the name of which derives from the Latin word for gourd, and includes all gourds, squashes, and melons worldwide. Cucumbers have been around and on the move for at least 3,000 years. They originated in India and Egypt, where they were cultivated for food and drink. Caravans of travelers to China and the Mediterranean carried cucumbers with them. The skins preserved the liquid within, assuaging thirst and providing food. Along with so many other plants that we now consider naturalized here in America, cucumbers were global migrants, carried in seed sacks, treated on ships, and planted in new soils far and wide. Alexander the Great introduced the cucumber to Europe, and Roman soldiers carried them to England. During the long, devastating Wars of the Roses in the 15th century, many English gardens were abandoned, and cucumbers were lost to cultivation for a while, but not for long. Early in the 16th century, Henry VIII's Spanish bride, Catherine of Aragon, missed the green gardens of her Spanish homeland, so the king arranged for the importation of cucumber and salad green seeds from Flanders, as well as Flemish gardeners themselves, to see to their cultivation. Cucumbers were among the first vegetables planted in the New World, and the plants spread quickly through the Caribbean. Columbus reported that they were thriving in Haiti in 1494. Fernando de Soto found them growing in Florida when he invaded that in 1539. The indigenous peoples of the Americas were quick to discover the value of the cucumber for quenching both hunger and thirst, and once cucurbits hit the mainland, they were soon being traded farther north. While no solid documentation exists, it has been said that 4 years before De Soto's 16th century sighting, Jacques Cartier saw cucumbers growing in the gardens of Indian villages along the banks of the St. Lawrence River in what is now Montreal. Of course, cucumbers traveled not only with the Spaniards to southern parts of the New World, but later came with the Pilgrims to North America. Captain John Smith wrote that they were planted in Jamestown in 1609. The Quakers maintained their reputation as superb horticulturists by developing new varieties, especially for pickles or salads. Back in England, in the latter part of the 17th century, a prejudice developed against uncooked vegetables and fruits in general. A number of articles in contemporary health publications then stated that uncooked plants brought on summer diseases and so should be forbidden to children. It was thought that raw cucumbers might be dangerous and were, quote, fit only for cows. Hence, they sometimes were called cowcumbers. According to 18th century British writer Samuel Johnson, it was commonly said among English physicians that a cucumber, quote, should be well sliced, dressed with pepper and vinegar, and then thrown out as good for nothing. Others maintained that cooking cucumbers made them perfectly safe. You could eat a plateful and live to tell the tale, especially if they were prepared according to the immensely popular cookbook by a certain Mrs. Raffold called The Experienced English Housekeeper, published in 1769. Her recipe for stewed cucumbers directed that they be fried and then boiled, assuring that that certainly would neutralize any threat. Quite honestly, that sounds completely disgusting to me. Mrs. Isabella Beaton's Book of Household Management was published in 1861, and in it she suggests that delicate stomachs should avoid this plant since it is cold and indigestible. But there was yet another way to make the cucumber edible, pickling. In England, well before Mrs. Raffold's recipe appeared, pickles had become a 17th century fad and were supplied in barrels at coffee houses for snacking on the go. Actually, even well before that, pickles had a special use. In the late 15th and early 16th century, Amerigo Vespucci was a ship chandler, a profession that undertakes the task of providing provisions and equipment to ocean-going vessels. In Seville, he outfitted voyages, including some of Columbus's, with preserved goods like pickled vegetables and meats. Before this inclusion of various fruits, vitamin C deficiency decimated crews on long sea voyages. While the link between pickles and scurvy prevention wasn't scientifically understood at the time, stocking ships with pickled provisions was known to help keep sailors healthier on their transatlantic journeys. Cucumbers had more specific medicinal uses too. Apothecaries stocked them for their healing powers. Seeds treated bowel and urinary inflammations and expelled tapeworms, while the pulp and juice soothed skin conditions and sunburn. Even Cleopatra was said to rely on cucumbers to preserve her celebrated complexion. Today, beauty consultants still swear by cucumber slices to soothe tired, puffy eyes. Some years ago, I read Stefano Mancuso's book, The Incredible Journey of Plants. It's short, only 158 pages, and is an easy-to-read history of many of our commonly grown garden plants, both ornamental and edible. The book is available at the Merriam Public Library and presents fascinating stories of plant migration that reveal unexpected connections between nature and culture, with an even more detailed history of the cucumber, should you wish to learn more. We do know, of course, of the many plants that have migrated from the continent to continent by means of humans, but the number and variety of natural methods by which seeds spread is nothing short of astonishing. Besides simply falling from the plant, seeds may be dispersed by wind and water, by the swaying of the mother plant, transported by animals, and some plants need specific animals to spread. They spread by using propulsive mechanisms, as do the jewelweed and bittercress in my yard, and much more. We may look into this further in a future broadcast. Now let me remind you, especially you newer gardeners, that several types of vegetables and herbs not only can, but should, be planted periodically through the growing season, even into fall. The cilantro and dill that self-sowed in my beds late last fall sprouted up this spring as soon as the ground warmed, and now are blooming. I have other younger plants, just reaching harvest size, that I had sowed some weeks ago to ensure a continuing supply. And then, just a couple of days ago, I sprinkled more seed of both of these herbs in some empty spots around the yard. It doesn't take much. I never feel I have to confine my herb growing to a formal bed or even to the vegetable garden, but I'll sow cilantro and dill here and there to ensure a continuing supply of the fresh young herbs all season long. I do like to allow some to flower anyway, since tiny native bees are attracted to the correspondingly tiny flowers that these two herb plants offer. Chives did the same earlier on, and later in the season, garlic chives in bloom will also provide for these diminutive but necessary pollinators, as well as larger honeybees and bumblebees that also enjoy these flowers. In the meantime, my enthusiastically blooming lavender is attracting a wide variety of insects to their fragrant flowers, as is penstemon, wild quinine, and others. Although I welcome the flowers of the herbs I just mentioned, there are several herbs you want to keep from blooming in order to extend the harvest of the foliage. Keep your basil and other herb plants like mint, oregano, and marjoram from flowering by pinching out the tips as soon as you see tiny flower buds forming, or maybe even before. Pinch basil plants even if you have no immediate use for the fresh herb, although I cannot imagine such a thing in summer. This will encourage the plant to keep producing until you have enough for a batch or two of pesto for the freezer. In fact, most herb plants, once established, benefit by being cut back regularly by about one-third, which keeps them bushy and productive. Sow a handful more of bush beans every couple of weeks for a continuous supply. I always soak my bean seed overnight and then keep them damp for another day or so in a paper towel, just until I see the tiny sprout barely beginning to break the skin. I plant them immediately then in damp soil and remember to continue to water daily, because if the seed dries out after it germinates, it will die. Boost the yield by adding legume inoculant when planting. Topping the plants off with a light sprinkling of shredded leaves or dried grass clippings once they're up will help keep the soil shaded and a bit moist. Later in the summer, I will remind listeners to start some additional types of vegetables, those that like to mature in cooler weather, such as cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, peas, and various kinds of lettuce and other greens. Those misguided folks who think that an entire garden should be planted by June 1st, or else they've missed the window of opportunity, are missing out on so much goodness. High-maintenance gardening season is in full swing, so this is Carol Kelly saying, put on your sunblock and floppy-brimmed hat, maybe some insect repellent, and go out to enjoy all that nature has to offer in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.